Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter, reimagining the use of parks, trails, and shorelines. More info and examples are at wiasla.com. Support for WPR comes from Hooper Corporation, supplying custom construction services to commercial, industrial, and utility customers. Committed to quality and integrity, Hooper is dedicated to supporting the communities where they live and work.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
But we're not. It's virtual. We're real. Here. We're actually here. We are real. We are not AI.
You do look
we
very real.
We are I, and just, you are you.
We're just intelligent.
That's
a leap, I feel like, at least from my end over here. We're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Okay, parenting. You're a parent, right?
You've got
young kids. So you've got frustrations.
Sure.
You've got joy. Parenthood may actually keep your brain young. We're going to talk about research for that. And tea brewing may help filter out heavy metals. Where are the heavy metals coming from? Tea, what are we talking about? We're going to talk about issues that have to do with tea and how you prepare it.
Interesting. And then we have an Elvis-inspired recipe today.
I know. I got a cookbook from a friend of mine. It's a wonderful cookbook. Elvis's favorite recipes. And we are going to do a quick chicken supper skillet, one of the Elvis favorite recipes. And let me tell you, if you're an Elvis fan, you'll love this recipe. And if you're not an Elvis fan, you still will love this recipe.
That sounds great. To the phones.
And he's not going to be on the phone with us, by the way.
You never know.
He is going to be here virtually.
Oh, there you go. Good callback. All right, to the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's help out our first caller now from Verona, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, this is Scott. And a recent show, I heard you talking about ADD medication for kids in school. Mm-hmm. You're talking about it from the point of keeping the kid from interrupting or disturbing the classroom. But I've had ADD. I was diagnosed at 8, which is almost 40 years ago now. And my experience was that until I was diagnosed and treated for it, I thought I was stupid.
Wow.
The other kids in class could do the assignments, and I couldn't. You can't mm-hmm. learn what you're supposed to do if you can't pay attention, and you have no reference point if that's the
right.
way you've been your entire
right,
life.
Right, right, right. So ultimately, what happened? You were 8 years old. Tell me what went on then with your mom and dad and the diagnosis and the treatment.
Well, luckily for me, my mom was a teacher, and she recognized that what she was seeing from me on my own was not matching up with the way I was learning.
Sure.
So she knew it wasn't a behavioral issue, or it mm-hmm. wasn't that I didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
So she did some research and found that it was likely that I had ADD to her. She took me to the psychologist, and I was diagnosed with it and put on medication. Took maybe 4 or 5 months for mm-hmm. to get the medication dosages correct, which happened between the end of third grade and the start of fourth grade. And
wow. Wow.
I went from hating school and being one of the worst kids in the class for third grade to finding school interesting, like math problems. They were fun to do, and being interested in other subjects because I could pay attention and actually follow along with what they were talking about.
Right. Very, very, very interesting. Really an important thing to share with other people. And there are different ways of treating it. Some people may have ADD and they need medication. Some people have ADD and they don't necessarily need medication. There's a whole spectrum, just like there's a spectrum of life. And so medication can be very, very useful. And as a family doc, I had a number of patients who were on medication, such as yourself when you were younger, and it made a huge difference. Like like you said, you thought you were stupid, but you were not stupid. You just needed something to do something with whatever's going on electronically. I mean, there are electrical impulses in the brain that allow you to sit in a classroom and learn. So it made a difference in your life. And I think that's important to share with others, especially there are a number of parents who are really reticent to use medication to treat their child with ADD, when in fact, those medications can make a huge difference. And you are a perfect example of that. So are you still on medications, by the way, right now?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. And it really does make a difference in your life. So, well, thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic. We're talking about how parenthood may help keep your brain young. I'm just looking at, there's some new research here.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I mean,
your parents, your kids
headline.
Are young. How old are your kids?
They are 6 and 9.
And they are full of energy, right?
Oh, yeah, very
full
much.
Of energy. What happens when you want to put them to sleep? What do they do?
They don't want to go to sleep, usually.
They don't want to go to sleep?
No.
Why don't they want to go to sleep?
They're tired. I always want to
They've
go to sleep.
They've been up all day. You want to go to sleep. You want to go to their bedroom. They want to play? What's going on here?
Well,
do you ever figure that out? I never did with our 4 kids. I mean, I never
Does anyone ever figure it out? I don't know.
No.
We try. But it's weird reading this headline, how it keeps your brain young.
Well,
I feel
it's
like
very
it's the opposite
so,
for me. I don't feel younger at my brain at
you
all.
You don't feel younger
fatigued,
in your brain with your kids.
Just foggy,
well, it's really,
fatigued.
You know what it is? It's like puzzle solving. I think
okay.
that's it. So first of all, the research is published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PROCSci, as it's called. Very, very important. That's a journal that is peer-reviewed, refereed. It's very hard to get any research into that journal. So if you've got something like that, it's really, really important. And they looked at functional connectivity in individuals, which tend to change in terms of what's going on in your brain network. So they were looking at neural networks within the brain. And this had to do with research that occurs in the United Kingdom, the Biobank study. It's a large-scale biomedical data research base. And they looked at parents' connectivity and neural networks, and lo and behold, parents appeared to have stronger neural networks who had children that they're dealing with all the time. So in other words, it appears that there may be functional stuff going on. Now, there is stress and strain, obviously, raising kids. I'm sure you've occasionally had those stressful times.
Sure, it happens.
Probably more than once a week.
Stress and strain is a nice way to put it.
Stress and strain. But the stress and strain may actually lead to increase in cognition, because we know physical activity, we know social interaction, we know cognitive stimulation, like doing crossword puzzles, all these things increase the ability of the brain to actually problem solve. So we always say with older people, oh, do crossword puzzles. That will increase connectivity in your brain. But the answer may be older people should deal with young kids.
So they should have more kids when they're older, you're
Well,
saying?
They should deal. Yeah, that would be another thing. But they should. But dealing with children means you're continuously problem solving.
Sure.
Aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
What happened over the last week or two with your children? Can you think of something we had? I mean, I love the way you're rolling
I'm
your
like,
eyes
oh.
right now.
Man.
I'm looking
I
at you. You're
remember.
Rolling your
That's
head.
That's the funny thing. I'm in such a fog. I
no,
can't remember
can't,
what happened.
But you can't remember because as soon as it's done, it's out.
Right.
And that's exactly what it is because you're in there. You want to get dinner on the table. You want to get them to sleep. You want to help them with your homework.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing that stands out because the whole thing stands out.
Okay. It's a big block of fog. Is
well,
what you're
it's
saying.
A big block of fog because you're actually not foggy during the time. Because when you're with your kids, you can't be foggy, right?
No.
You're not foggy.
No.
You're with them, and they're interacting with you, and sometimes you want a break. And what's happening, that connectivity, because they're dealing with you and you're dealing with them, increases your cognition. So that's what this study shows. Parenthood keeps your brain young. You get something from it. And in many ways, grandparenthood, of working with grandparents, will also keep their brains young and keep them going as they get older.
Interesting research. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. You can call the show anytime. You can leave us a voicemail. Let's go to one of those now. Let's help out a caller in Branson, Missouri.
Thinking about getting cataracts removed. They're not real bad now. They might be rated at 2.5 or 3. should I get them removed? When you have partial vision so many years of your life, it's a little scary to get cataract surgery in that, number one, I will not get my central vision back, and number two, there's no such thing as a no-risk surgery. So I'm trying to build up the courage to do it so some of the cloudiness will leave for my peripheral vision. I would love your opinion on the matter, seeing that I'm going to go see my eye doctor and would like to come armed with some strong, realistic opinions and expectations. Thank you for your opinion and help. Love, Marilyn.
Absolutely a great question. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I've had cataract surgery.
Oh, okay.
So let me tell you a little bit about it in a minute. So she has some central vision loss. You know, that's what she mentioned. That has nothing to do with cataracts, by the way. That may probably, most likely, is macular degeneration. I don't know because, you know, it was a recorded call. But will it improve her vision? And the answer is, yes, it does improve your vision. Cataracts, you remove it. It's when the lens yellows. Basically, it puts more light into the retina, the back of the eye, which is where we actually see our vision. And more light means more information, which means your brain gets better. It means you generally, your vision gets better. But she's right. There is no such thing as a no-risk surgery. So, good example of how our brain goes. Here it is. Years ago, you know, I'm an old guy, so I can say years ago.
You're a young mind, though.
Young mind, old guy, because I have four kids. So yeah, these grandchildren, you know, they keep me busy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what happened was a number of years ago, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, went into my ophthalmologist's office because I get checked every couple of years, not every year, but every couple of years. And the optician said, are either of your eyes cloudy? And I closed one eye, and lo and behold, it was cloudy. I hadn't really realized it. So long story short, I had a cataract removed. It's a 15-minute procedure. What you have to do before that takes a long time. You're in the office. You know, you're put to sort of in a semi-sleep position. You know, you have drops put in your eyes. But the actual procedure is about 15 minutes, where basically they suck out the old lens, put in the new lens, and they're done. Incredible procedure that gives you more information in your eye. I loved it. But then a year later, I went back, and I said, you know, the other eye is kind of a little bit off. Should I have it done? And he said to me, good ophthalmologist, he said, are you sure you want it done? And I said, why? He said, well, it's not a no-risk procedure. And I thought, for my left eye, I thought, you know what? Doesn't really bother me that much. So I didn't have it done for 4 years. Huh. And the reason was 4 years later, it became cloudy, and then I had it done. So as she's looking at this, she has to think, number one, I've got loss of central vision. Number two, it's a low-risk procedure, but not a no-risk procedure. And number three, what do I think I should do? Because you're the only one who understands your eye.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we take a break, Zorba, we love getting voicemails from folks who want to share a comment or a health tip with us. So it's time again for Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments.
Such a sweet song.
It is. With their health tips.
Makes me want to hug up to a pillow.
Yeah.
And just kind of
and just take
think
a nap.
About, yeah, take just take a nap. That's right. Take a nap. That's right. Can we have something a little bit bouncier?
Maybe later in the show. Maybe some Elvis.
We'll see.
All right. The first voicemail came from a listener in Indiana.
Yes, I've been diagnosed with RLS for 30 years. Recently, a doctor took blood tests, found out I was iron deficient. I now take iron supplement every day, have zero issues with RLS from that point forward. Thank you very much.
Very interesting. So his RLS was caused by some sort of an anemia. Is taking an iron supplement. By the way, we don't recommend iron supplements to people to take unless they get a blood test because it can interfere. For instance, quite often people who have iron deficiency anemia in our country are due to some loss of iron through the colon and can be the first sign of colon cancer. So that's why we don't recommend iron. We recommend it to menstruating women. We don't recommend it to men unless there's some reason. But obviously, he had an iron deficiency, anemia of some sort, took the iron, the RLS went away. Great. I don't recommend iron supplements to people with restless leg syndrome, but if you're curious, talk to your doctor, get a blood test, see whether or not you're anemic. In this case, this worked for him.
That's great. And I'll jump in real quick here. I've wrestled with RLS over the years.
Really?
Just once in a while here and there, you know.
Yeah.
And something that's really helped me is, and I think I've talked about it on the show before, is just before I go to bed, I lay down in bed, stretching my legs.
In bed.
In bed with like those stretchy bands, those exercise bands.
Oh, so you do that.
Yep. Every night, just do some stretches.
How long do you do it?
Like 3-4 minutes. It's not that long. Just do that and then go to bed. And it's really helped
a lot.
So
that has made a big difference, those stretchy bands.
Yeah.
So you've been doing that.
No, I rarely get it.
So how many years have you been doing that for?
I just started about a year ago.
How'd you figure it out?
It was a tip from my mother-in-law.
From your mother-in-law. So
thanks,
maybe
Debbie.
Thanks, Debbie, if you're listening. Actually, maybe we should have a song, Mother-in-Law Tips. That's what we should have, Mother-in-Law Tips.
I know a song we can use for that. Isn't there a song? Mother-in-law.
Yeah,
something like that?
Yeah, I think it's a different kind of a song, and it would be a different kind of a tip. But getting back to it.
Okay.
So you really talked about stretching your legs in some way can make a difference. Stretching those feet and relaxing the muscles there, that also works. Lots of treatments for RLS, restless leg syndrome. Mm-hmm. We'd like to hear from you.
Sure.
Send your recommendation to Zorba at WPR.org. What is your tip to reduce your restless leg syndrome?
All right. Let's now hear from a listener in Massachusetts.
Hello. I'm an occasional listener of the show, but I certainly enjoy it. You were talking about hiccups and hiccup cures, and I happen to have one that I would like to pass along. If you burp and hiccup at the same instant, it sends a spasm down to your diaphragm, and your hiccups will disappear. It is a little uncomfortable for that one moment, but it definitely cures the hiccups. You do need that ability to burp whenever you need to by swallowing air. A lot of people can't do that, but if you can, this will work. Take care.
That seems difficult to pull off.
Yeah. Unless you're a teenager. Teenagers can always swallow air and burp.
We could burp
the alphabet, right? Don't you remember?
Right?
There was always somebody who could burp the alphabet.
Oh, yeah.
They could do it, swallow it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't you? But, you know, I don't think it'd be too difficult. If I had a lot of hiccups, I'd just swallow a lot of air, and then I would try to, you got to sort of time it.
Yeah.
Hey, it works.
Sure, you know, whatever works.
That really makes a difference. I wonder if you pass gas and hiccup at the same time, whether or not that would work. We're not going to use the F word for that. But
flatulence?
Flatulence.
Okay, good.
That's
got
right.
That.
Flatulence.
Got it.
Yeah, you did use it.
All right, finally, Zorba. We always love hearing from doctors who occasionally call into our show. So let's hear a constipation tip from a familiar voice on the show.
Hi, Carl and Zorba. It's Ron Roth, your friendly cardiologist in Las Vegas and Utah. As always, I enjoy your show. Last month, you had a fellow that was plagued with constipation, and you'd mentioned Miralax, Lactulose, and Metamucil, all of which are good for bowel health. One I haven't heard you mention before is a stool softener called Colace, and I use it frequently for patients. Docusate is the generic name. As always, you've got a great show. Thank you.
Well, it's kind of interesting. That's a Colace stool softener is often given in the hospital. But if you look at the research on stool softeners, it's pretty plus minus.
Oh,
does it actually do something? And so especially since I've looked at that research pretty recently, I've generally stayed away from Colace because for many people it doesn't do anything and it's another pill that they just take. But for some people it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pill. It's a tablet. You might want to try it. But I'll stick with Miralax, which I think is really good. Metamucil. Those are really the two over-the-counter things that I still think. And I'll tell you something. Whenever we talk about constipation, we get lots of responses.
Oh, sure.
I mean, constipation seems to be a national preoccupation where people think, you know, that they have to attend to their bowels all the time. But when I talk about constipation, I get emails that just flood in telling me what they do for constipation. So you know what? If you've got a miracle cure for your constipation, send it to Zorba@WPR.org. That's Zorba@WPR.org. And let me tell you something. Carl is looking down at his sheet. Right now, wondering what am I going to do with all these constipation? That's right. Yeah, what jokes do you have for constipation email?
All right, I'm just gonna roll through it. More of your calls to come. More of your emails, and we're gonna put together a recipe from an Elvis cookbook that you brought in, Zorba, It's from the 90s.
Friend of mine. It's a cookbook. Yeah. It's wonderful. We have to look it up.
Okay, I got it here. You brought it in. I'm going to look it up.
Let's see what it is.
Copyright on this is 1992. There you go.
1992, but we know Elvis died way before 1992.
That's right.
But somebody thought enough to put these recipes together. We are going to do Elvis's quick. Mind you, it's quick.
That's quick.
Chicken supper skillet.
And if you're a fan of Elvis,
or are a new fan of Elvis, you are going to want to listen to this recipe. Quick chicken supper skillet.
All of that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. You're listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. He's right over there. He's wearing Oh, that's a beautiful retro
Wisconsin sweater. It's retro.
Red and white stripes.
I wanted an old thing and I went to, have you ever heard of eBay?
Yeah, I have. I bought an accordion off eBay once that was all moldy.
Yeah, well, this was, you could return it.
That doesn't look moldy,
I wanted a retro sweater from the 60s. I got it. But I'm retro.
You're retro.
I'm definitely retro.
This recipe is retro because it's from an Elvis cookbook called Are You Hungry Tonight?
That's right.
Which is pretty funny. This is from the 90s.
Are You Hungry Tonight? Sounds like Are You Hungry Tonight?
I was hoping you'd sing that.
Yeah, Are You Hungry Tonight? That's about it.
So before we get to the recipe, though, you brought in the book for us.
I did.
It looks great.
I got it from a friend of mine, Rochelle. She picked up two of them at a secondhand store.
Okay.
One for her and one for me.
She knows. She does. So there is, before we get to the recipe, there's a pretty funny, interesting Elvis-Madison connection. So this happened in 1977. Didn't he die in 1977?
So this is his last year of life. Right.
He was on tour. Mm-hmm. This is an article from Haley Sperling of the CityCast Madison podcast. And I'm just going to read this. So in the early hours, June 24th, 1977, Elvis had recently arrived in Madison, Wisconsin from a concert in Des Moines, Iowa. While his limo was stopped at a red light on East Washington Avenue, Elvis noticed a teen on the ground being beaten by two other youths. As the story goes, Elvis jumped out of his limo and confronted the teens in his classic karate stance, saying, "I'll take you on." That didn't sound like Elvis, but I can't do Elvis. I've heard this story, by the way.
Yes.
Upon recognizing the rocker, the teens stopped fighting and shook Elvis's hand. Mm-hmm. He waited around until the situation settled and reportedly asked, "Is everything settled now?" The teens promised to keep the peace and Elvis went on his way. And there is a small plaque to commemorate the event that's installed at the scene of the fight along East Washington Avenue.
At that particular time, I was working at Madison General Hospital, which is now Meritor Hospital, in the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the story. I remember when that story actually came out that that's what it was, because he was doing some concert. I don't know if he did a concert in Madison So I did not go to the concert, but I was working in the air, and that story is real.
That's pretty wild. And you didn't go to that concert because, now you told me this before, you're not a big fan of Elvis.
I am not an Elvis fan.
But you like his recipes, apparently.
I'm not an Elvis. Come on, there were the Beatles and the Stones in one corner of that ring.
Okay.
And there was Elvis. And, you know, Elvis was really big, and then the Beatles and the Stones took over, and that's where I was.
Sorry, the Beatles and the Stones, with
Bob Dylan moved in on the side. Elvis was like Bing Crosby, old school.
Should we do this one?
Absolutely.
All right.
Quick chicken supper skillet. Start out with, these are going to do all of the ingredients as they're listed in the cookbook. 1/3 cup of flour.
Okay, 1/3 cup flour.
1/2 teaspoon salt.
1/2 teaspoon salt.
1/4 teaspoon pepper.
Quarter teaspoon black pepper.
Quarter teaspoon poultry seasoning. Use your best. Doesn't have to be from the 60s. It can be a new bottle.
Hopefully it's not. Quarter little tea poultry seasoning.
2.5 pounds of chicken pieces, breasts, legs, thighs, whatever you want to have there.
All right. 2.5 pounds chicken pieces.
Couple of tablespoonfuls of butter.
All right. Couple tablespoons of butter.
Tablespoonful corn oil.
1 big tea corn oil.
Cup of long grain white rice.
Cup of long grain white rice.
You can see it's not a very healthy recipe, you know
corn
what?
Corn oil.
That's it. Come on, gotta have something.
Yeah.
Cup of chopped onion.
Cup of chopped onion.
Cup of chopped carrots.
Chopped carrots.
Cup of coarsely chopped celery.
Coarsely chopped celery.
Sounds pretty good, really. Cup of coarsely chopped mushrooms.
Cup of coarsely chopped mushrooms.
Teaspoons of crumbled basil.
There you go.
And a 10-ounce can of broth.
All right.
In a large plate, combine the flour, salt, pepper, poultry seasoning. Dredge the chicken in the mixture. Heat the butter and oil. Very important, butter and oil, because it's going to change when it actually begins to smoke.
Right. You want to make sure you mix it right, because you want to make sure it's all shook up,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Oh, all shook up? Really? Really? You
nope.
Try to pass that by. Pass
shoehorned
that by.
In. Hey,
a little
less conversation,
it's
a little okay. More recipe, please,
Brown
Zorba.
Brown the recipe on both sides. Remove it from the skillet.
Okay, Brad's now got a rim shot he's throwing at us.
Cook the rice, onion, carrots, celery, and mushrooms till the veggies are tender, about 2 minutes. Stir in the basil and chicken broth. Arrange the brown chicken on the top of the rice mixture in the skillet. Bring it to a boil. Cover, reduce the heat, simmer for about 30 minutes till the rice and chicken are tender. And really, you've got a quick chicken supper skillet. Now, when I say quick, it actually is quick to get together. You've just got to get all of your stuff together at the very beginning. And there's one of my favorite cookbooks, Ruman's 20 Recipes. And the first recipe in his cookbook is Think.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you look at everything, get it all together, think, and you can put it together in about 10 minutes. And then you've got a recipe where somebody will sing for their supper because they'll want to sing for this.
That's good. That's good. I was going to say, you want to be careful with the heat, right, with this chicken. You definitely don't want to end up with a hunk of burning chicken, right? Thanks, Brad.
That's it?
That's it. I mean, you got to make sure the chicken's nice and, you know, I love me some tender chicken.
Yeah,
so we got
it.
We got it.
I'll tell you, Carl, this is what's important. Oh. If you're lonely tonight, this is the chicken dish for you.
And if you want a copy of this recipe, go now. Hey, it's now or never.
It's now or never.
To our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, through Facebook.
Back to the phones at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's help out a caller now in Conyers, Georgia. Hi.
Fine, Dr. Zorba. How you doing?
Very good, thanks.
How can we help?
Well, I have a son that's hyperactive ADHD and doesn't sleep well at night. It's like he never shuts down. And I'm trying to figure out if there are some vitamins, some natural supplements that can get him to shut down.
Uh-huh.
He never goes into REM sleep.
Never seems to go into it, huh? How old is he?
Right. He's 26.
26, okay. So he's been dealing with this for a long time.
I first noticed it about 4 years ago.
Huh. How'd you notice it? I mean, he's a grown... does he live at home, or how did you know about it?
We're right next door to him.
Gotcha.
Him and his wife, and we're there daily, and we see things, and we talk to the wife.
Sure.
He'll go to sleep. Can't sleep at night. He'll go to sleep, take a nap. During the day, about an hour or two, he popped up.
Got it.
And then he's up 1 o'clock, between 1 and 4 a.m., and then he can't sleep all day, but he's fired.
I bet he is.
Irritable and all
for
that.
Sure. So, I've got some ideas. What's he do for a living?
Well, he was doing landscaping. Mm-hmm. He was doing retail. Right now, he's... been doing some delivery work and everything.
Got you. So he can work at different times during the day. Okay, I've got a couple of very specific things, especially since this has occurred lately. I've got a couple of ideas here. First of all, it's important for him to limit his naps. That's number one. That's number one, because you've got to reset your circadian rhythm, which is your natural clock. So number one, If he naps during the day, it's at most one nap during the day, and it's 20 minutes by the clock. In other words, and if his wife is around or somebody else is around, he's got an alarm, he stays no more than 20 minutes. If you nap for an hour in the middle of the day, you disturb your nighttime sleep. And that's what he's doing. So he's got to move all that desire, that brain desire to shut off into the nighttime. So number one, no nap. And he's going to be tired for a few days when he does this, believe me. No nap more than 20 minutes. And that's about it. One nap a day if he's got to do it. Number two, good sleep hygiene. That means he goes to sleep at a regular time. Every single day, he goes to sleep 9, 10, 11 o'clock, whenever he goes to sleep. And if he gets up in the middle of the night, he doesn't get out of bed. He stays in bed. He either reads something, does not watch TV, or he listens to something like a podcast through his earphone. Very important to stay in bed. And he's going to have fragmented sleep for a few days, maybe up to a week or two. But he's got to reset that biological clock. So that's the second thing I recommend. We'll also put on our website a link to good sleep hygiene from the Mayo Clinic. They've got a number of tips. But the third thing is, if he thinks he's depressed, and if his wife thinks he's depressed, and if you think he's depressed, a low-dose antidepressant at bedtime, something called a tricyclic antidepressant, such as nortriptyline, can make a big difference. It can help you sleep at night, and it can get rid of your depression, which may be part of his AD, you know, his basic sleep problem, which is disturbing him. Those are my recommendations.
Okay. And that is the major problem right there. I was trying to get him to get on something natural. The first thing I thought of was like melatonin to get him to relax.
That can work in a mild way. Sure.
And he didn't want to take that. He said, I'm not taking any prescription narcotics because they're addicted to everything because of the chemicals and everything.
You bet. And narcotics are bad. You are 100% correct. But a drug like nortriptyline in a low doses we give to people for chronic pain and for other things, just 25 milligrams, a low dose at bedtime, or 10 milligrams of another antidepressant called doxepin, that can regulate the sleep. You take it for a while, for like a month or two, and then you quit taking it. That can make a big difference. But he's got to redo it the natural way. No nap more than 20, as I said, 20 minutes during the day, going to sleep at the same time every night, and realizing you're not going to have a good night's sleep for a while. It's going to be fragmented, but he's got to reset his clock so he can sleep better at night.
Okay.
That can make a difference. Obviously, you guys are a close family, aren't you?
Yeah, Todd, because wife and kids and everything, and the thing is, and he's very ambitious, and he's upset because of the working situations, how it's been haphazard, up and down, and once you get out of a job,
that's right.
Like, right. Pulling teeth to get back in.
Very, 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 very tough. Well, a good night's sleep is going to help him because he's going to get everything in order. He'll be much more with it, and that can help him get that job. That can make a difference. You know, we don't function well without sleep. None of us do. We all know that. We function better with a good night's sleep. But like I said, all those things might make a difference for him. So thanks for calling.
Thank you, sir.
You take care now.
All right, you too.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. Let's try to help out a caller in Florida.
My question is regarding OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. What is your recommendation? Is there something other than therapy? ERP is what I've been told. Are there any herbal benefits, something that's non-pharmaceutical? Thank you.
You know, I've done a lot of research over the years on OCD, true obsessive compulsive disorder. I mean, you know, some of us get obsessive at certain things. You know, before I leave the house, I always check a few things, coffee pot. Mm-hmm. If I'm going internationally, I always check my passport, even though I know it's in the same place, you know, just before we do that. But for true OCD, it's hard for people sometimes to leave the house. Mm-hmm. I had one patient whose wife had OCD, and when he came in the house, the first thing he had to do was literally take off his clothes at the door and take a shower because she thought, because she was obsessive about cleanliness and getting to clean clothes in the house. It was very, very difficult for some. Therapy can help with some people. There are some great medications out there for OCD. There are psychiatrists that specialize in OCD. A lot of primary care people also treat OCD, and the medications really work. There's not just one. There are a variety of medicines, and I'm a great believer in the medicines for OCD. Herbal remedies, I don't think I've never seen anything that really shows that they do much. There may be a few things that you can look at, consumerlab.org or consumerlab.com, rather, because they're the ones that I go to for herbal remedies. You know, you pick one that works for you, but I haven't seen anything that really makes a difference. Medications can make a difference with anyone with serious OCD.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, time again to hear from your favorite backseat drivers.
The Grammar Police.
You sounded so excited about it.
It's kind of an earworm, you know? It's kind of an earworm. Please, go on.
All right, here's a new one, Zorba. This came from a division of the Grammar Police that puts the capital P in police. This is from the Urine Police.
God.
So the following voicemail.
Down and out.
Yeah. The following voicemail is from a listener in Wisconsin.
Hello. I was just going to comment on something you stated recently here on a radio program about the smell of urine when people eat asparagus, and some people, it's actually all persons that consume asparagus will have smelly urine. The difference is that some persons are able to smell that and some persons cannot. So therein lies the distinction. All urine is smelly when persons eat asparagus, but some people can smell that and some people cannot. I suppose it has a genetic basis like so many things. Thanks for your radio program. Bye-bye.
Therein lies the distinction.
That's it.
Right?
That's it. So some people can smell it. In other words, if you are going out on a date,
okay,
and you're ordering like a wonderful salmon dish with asparagus, right?
Sure.
You know, and you don't think much about it because you can't smell the asparagus in your urine, you know.
Right.
But, you know, all of a sudden, you know, does your whole body begin to smell like something bad for but the other person on the date smells you and you don't? I think that means that if you go out on a date, especially a first date, it should be asparagus free.
I think I see a t-shirt coming. Kind of like your no kale t-shirt.
That's right, no kale, no asparagus. You got it.
All right, do you want to join the ever-growing Grammar Police Force? Well, you're in luck. Post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, more emails, more voicemails, and another healthy living topic to discuss. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor
on your health.
Carl Christensen in Buck Studio. I'm sitting across the desk from Dr. Zorba Pastor,
That's the one and only, the legend. The one, the legend.
The icon. And if you have a question for the icon, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413.
The meme.
Yeah, that's you. So let's get to our second healthy living topic. I'm going to read this headline. Tea brewing may help filter out heavy metals.
Well, it's kind of, kind of interesting drinking tea. You know, there's a lot of stuff with tea. We know it's good. We know that it may help a little bit. We know that people wake up from it. You know, tea was, of course, the beverage of choice for the Brits.
I love tea.
So drinking tea may lower the risk for heart disease and inflammation. There's some interesting studies about this. But they were looking at the brewing process may help purify water.
Hmm.
Very interesting. So they looked at brewing tea may absorb heavy metals like lead and cadmium that may be in your water. Well, they shouldn't be in your water, of course, in the first place. But it was a systemic thing. So what they did, they took bags of tea, you know, tea bags. So we're not talking about cellulose tea bags, the ones that you dip in hot water in order to do it. And they put in metals in the water, okay? Mm. So in other words, they basically took water that was unpurified. They made it specifically unpurified. Then they brewed the tea in that water, and then they measured how much lead, cadmium, and other heavy metals were in the water. And lo and behold, it turned out that the tea actually got the metals to adsorb. That means it clanged to the tea itself in the tea bag. When you took the tea bag out of the water, you took the heavy metals out of the water. It's called adsorb, A-D-S-O-R-B. It's different than absorb.
Mm-hmm.
It means it goes to the surface. So it's kind of interesting that tea itself may actually purify water, and that's what they were looking at, whether or not it made a difference. So it's also interesting that when the British were in India, especially we're talking about in the 1800s, 1700s, 1800s, and 1900s, they drank a lot of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have, and of course, water was not as purified back in the day as it is now. And it may be the tea actually purified the water that they were drinking and took out other things besides heavy metals. So it's an interesting thing that tea does that is very different than coffee. And so for tea drinkers, this is sort of like maybe it actually makes my water more pure. So interesting work that has to do with that. Tea has other consequences. You were going to say something?
Yeah, is the thinking also that once this tea's in your body, does it help your body, like filter out some of the impurities?
I don't know. I mean, they didn't do that. That's a totally different study. But maybe drinking tea itself, it may be that tea actually helps purify your body. I don't know.
Hmm.
You know, I think eating and drinking a variety of fruits and vegetables, drinking a variety of other things such as tea and coffee, that's the spice, not just the spice of life, but that may keep us healthier. And this is a good reason to drink tea.
You know who would be really interested in this article? It would be my mom, because she would have loved to, when I was 12-year-old, filter out all the heavy metal that was coming out of my room, actually. Too much heavy metal for me.
Too much heavy metal. Yep. Too much heavy metal.
Anyways,
you got it.
800-462.
But it was a good joke. It was a good joke. Right. I like it.
800-462.
It was okay in your stand-up routine. This is a sit-down radio routine.
I give it a
4 out of 10.
Out of that's okay. 10, sure.
800-462-7413.
That's 800-462.
I think a 4 out of 5 would be okay.
Okay, let's go with that.
A 4 out of 5.
Better than a 5 out of 4.
Ask your children.
Okay, yeah. They hate my jokes. They absolutely
1-800-462-7413.
And let's go back to the phone lines now. Let's try to help out a caller in Viola, Wisconsin. Hi.
Dr. Zorba, I've got a problem with a knee, a joint on my inside left knee.
Mm-hmm.
Gives me problems.
Yeah. How long have you had that trouble?
About 6 months.
About 6 months. What are you doing about it?
I'm wearing a brace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that can help. Uh-huh.
And I was in the VA hospital in Madison a couple of weeks ago for cardiology, and they sent me downstairs and had me do X-ray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what'd they show?
Knee. But the question I've got to ask is that they took X-rays. When they operate, how long will I be laid up?
So, first of all, did they recommend that? Did they say, we think a knee surgery would help?
No, they haven't.
Oh, they haven't. Okay. So you never got, after they do the X-rays, they didn't sit down and say, hey, it looks like you've got some arthritis here, or it looks like you've got really bad arthritis.
No, they didn't. They're going to have me to come down for consultation.
Oh, got it. Okay. Well, a couple things. So, first of all, wearing a knee brace can be useful. Did they give you any exercises?
No, they did not.
Okay. Do you have access to a computer?
I do at the library.
At the library. So I would recommend you go to YouTube, and the reference librarian can help you at the library because they really are good. And go look at Bob and Brad knee exercises. That's what you do, because they'll give you some good exercises to do. And again, the librarians are great. They know how to get you on. The reference librarians, they love to help people. They are an underutilized resource, and they're awesome. So Bob and Brad, I would do some knee exercises, first of all, because you want to know whether or not those exercises are going to make a difference. And then Tylenol, the generic Tylenol, the 650 milligram tablets, you take one of those three times a day, see what that does. And you want to do that before you go for that consultation, because you want to know whether or not the exercise and the Tylenol is going to get rid of your pain, because that's going to help you decide whether or not you need surgery. It's really a function of how much pain you have and whether or not the conservative ways of treating it can make a difference.
If I have to have surgery, how long would I be laid up?
Well, you're laid up for a while. First of all, the first 2 weeks are very difficult. You often have to have other people around you. Sometimes they'll actually send you to a nursing home to rehab for 2 weeks if there's nobody at home. And then you've got, then basically you walk with a walker until you can get your strength up with that knee. So you're laid up for a couple of weeks where you need really help getting up and going to the bathroom to make sure you don't fall. A couple of weeks after that, a walker and you're ready to go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You take care. And as I said, go to that librarian. They will help you.
Bob and Brad?
Bob and Brad. You got it, man. Bob and Brad. Bob and Brad on YouTube. They're physical therapists, and they visually will show you what to do. They are a great reference.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. You know, one of the things we underutilize and don't think about are the reference librarians in libraries.
I couldn't agree more.
First of all, they're trained, they know what to do, and they often have a great idea of what to do, and they will help you search and help you find things that you need. And this is a great example of if you don't have internet access or you are on your phone and you say, I don't have a computer in front of me, want a larger screen, go to your local library, get on the internet, talk to the reference librarian, because they are always there to help you.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, it's time to hand the podium over to one of our listeners for a little bit. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
Okay, Zorba, the following email is from Jane, who writes, Hi, Zorba. I've listened happily to your show for years.
Nice.
I'm a person with diabetes. It hurts a bit to be defined by my disease when you call us, quote, diabetics. Mm-hmm. I dislike walking into a doctor's office and being asked right away, are you a diabetic? I know so well that I have diabetes, but I prefer to be called by my name as I'm a human being. I hope you can help us with this, as it's so prevalent in the medical community.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So first of all, she is a diabetic. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to walk in the office and say, are you a diabetic? That's really good. I mean, that's a really good point. So maybe that her interaction in the office is not really human. It's dehumanized. In other words, you're defined by your disease, not as a person. And that was a really important issue when I went through medical school, where they said, well, you don't talk about the diabetic in room 531 or something. You talk about the person in 531 mm-hmm. in a room. I remember, being mentored by a great older doctor. Now I'm that older doctor mm-hmm. saying you've got to humanize things. She brings up a really important point. You're not defined by your disease. You're defined by who you are as a person. And unfortunately, quite often when you walk into a provider's office these days, the person is looking at a screen at a computer, and then they look at you, then they look at the computer, mm-hmm. and then they look at you, then they look at a computer. And what you want to do is you want to stop that from happening. And if it happens with a provider where they really don't look at you as a person, I think you've got to have some way of saying, hey, I'm a person here, and shaking them out of that syndrome. And it's a very, very good point. She is not defined by her disease state.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. 462-7413. Let's go to another voicemail now. This is a listener from New Jersey.
First of all, thank you very much for your beautiful program. I would like to know if biopsy on the cancer gives the cancer in the blood and it can come as a form of cancer anywhere in the body. Thank you.
So our question is there a biopsy for cancer that will tell cancer anywhere in the body? So first of all, there is no cancer test that's specific for all cancers in the body. Take a skin biopsy, can tell if you've got cancer. Biopsy of the lung may tell if you have cancer in the lung, in the colon, and so on. So there's no overall biopsy. The other thing that people still, believe it or not, some people think if I get a biopsy and I touch the cancer, the biopsy is going to cause the cancer to spread. And that's still an old tale, which is not true. Not true at all. So the answer is biopsies are specific for a kind of cancer, and it's in a specific area, but there's no overall cancer test. That is a gold standard that we've been looking for years.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, before we clock out today, Zorba, let's take a listener email. The following question came from a listener, Audrey, who writes, "Thank you so much, Dr. Zorba. I love your show. My husband and I and our seven-month-old listen to you religiously."
Seven-month-old.
Nice comment. "I was wondering if you had a particular blood pressure medication that you prefer to prescribe with minimal side effects and or a long history with high efficacy. I'm 33 and I've been experiencing high blood pressure since my pregnancy last year, where I was diagnosed with preeclampsia. And I've had a hard time recovering and getting back to my pre-pregnancy blood pressure of 120 over 75. My doctor thinks going on medication for my high blood pressure would be good, but I'm worried about picking the right medication. In addition, I've been experiencing pretty intense pulsatile tinnitus, either way to say it.
That's right.
I learned something on the show, which my doctor thinks is related to the high blood pressure. So I want to do everything I can to improve and manage my high blood pressure as best as possible. Thanks."
Well, good question. So first of all, there are a number of good drugs to start with. I generally start with hydrochlorothiazide. So hydrochlorothiazide has been around for decades. It's got known and proven efficacy. It's a diuretic, but we use it in the non-diuretic dose. In other words, it actually is in the diuretic class, but we used to give, to actually cause true diuresis, we used to give 50 milligrams a day, which is a large dose. We don't do that anymore. 12.5 milligrams or 25 milligrams a day of hydrochlorothiazide. Good first drug to start with, safe to use during pregnancy. That would be my first choice. The reality is there are other drugs that are in the field that are good for you too, but I would choose that if you were my patient coming into my office. And this, by the way, is a virtual office.
It is a real table, though, or a desk. We have a real desk table here.
And I'm real. Yeah, I can touch my hand. I think so.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Should we do this again next week?
Absolutely.
All right. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And of course, you can always find us through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us
anytime
to leave us your question at
800-462-7413.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.